The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Try a month in print and online for free. And, for a limited time only, get a free wireless phone charger. Go to www.spectator.co.uk/charger to start today.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm John Connolly and I'm joined today by James Forsyth and Katie Bowles. Today, the row over Dominic Cummings' trip to Durham during lockdown rumbled on, with a growing number of Tory MPs either publicly criticising the Number 10 advisor or even calling for him to resign. We also saw the first government resignation over the issue today, with Douglas Ross, the Under Secretary of State for Scotland, handing in his resignation to Downing Street. Kate, to start us off, I think we've got around 35 or so MPs so far now, either calling for Cummings to resign or criticising him over his trip. Do you get the sense that this is a revolt that's sort of gaining momentum?
I think it is to a degree. I think that yesterday it did seem as though things were calming down slightly, and then it picked up again today. And I think particularly with Douglas Ross becoming the first minister, be it a junior minister, to resign over it, it gave it legs again. And you saw some new MPs coming out of the woodwork, but also I think just MPs who had previously said they wanted him to go, reasserting that they wanted Dominic Cummings to go. And I think that is still significant, because I think the fact that Dominic Cummings gave the press conference yesterday from the Rose Garden, that you had the Prime Minister recommitting, that you've had ministers out on the airwaves again this morning defending Dominic Cummings, it shows that that hasn't had the effect of changing those people's minds. The fact that they're still, you know, explaining why they think it needs to be done doesn't mean that Dominic Cummings is about to go. I spoke to one MP earlier who thinks that ultimately you'd need to get about 80 MPs, maybe 70, if you want to be on the modest side, potentially, in order for this to actually have the desired effect with Number 10. And I think that we're not there yet. Again, it feels as though it's slowed slightly, but I do think with these type of rebellions, it just takes, you know, a couple of events, something that you don't expect to happen, and suddenly it can pick up momentum again. I think what is clear is that this is not a happy Conservative Party, and calling round MPs and ministers today, there are plenty of people who aren't saying publicly they want Dominic Cummings to go, but are uncomfortable with the current situation. I do think that the fact that the Prime Minister has been so clear that he wants Dominic Cummings to stay put, to stay in role, means that you're at the moment not getting much in the way of the payroll coming out and saying anything publicly. So I think we're missing that trigger moment for now, which would bring the whole thing to a head.
Do you think, James, that Number 10 have been quite sort of disappointed with this, and that they presumably hope that Dominic Cummings's statement and press conference last night would mollify MPs?
Yeah, I think there was a hope that the details of the story, which I think make it more relatable, and Dominic Cummings's actions more explicable, would have calmed, and these two things are linked, both Tory MPs and public opinion. So far, it doesn't look like that has happened. I think another worry for Number 10 is, on Sunday, the Prime Minister kind of threw his full political authority behind Dominic Cummings. Now, normally when that happens, you would expect that to basically make MPs realise that this was not an issue worth pressing, because the Prime Minister wasn't for turning on it. What I think you've seen is that, you know, while it had an initial effect of slowing the flow of Tory MPs calling for Dominic Cummings to go, we're still up in the high 30s now. And I think that is a product not just of the fact that Dominic Cummings has operated in Westminster for 20 odd years and so has a decent number of enemies, but also that MPs' inboxes are still full of irate messages from constituents complaining about this kind of toxic sense that there was kind of one rule for one set of people and one rule for another set of people. So I think that this crisis hasn't ended for Number 10 yet. I think the Number 10, though, are still very, very determined to keep Dominic Cummings. I think there is a kind of feeling that whatever damage this is going to do has been done, and they would compound that damage by losing Dominic Cummings, which they think would make the government far less effective than it has been.
And Katie, we also saw new polling today which suggested that the public are not particularly happy either. I think around 71% of them believe that Dominic Cummings broke the lockdown rules. Do you get the sense that maybe Number 10 are hoping this will change still? I know it did follow some quite critical coverage in the papers this morning and last night. Or do you think now they're going to accept the public thinks this and maybe just hope to weather the storm?
I think the question is, how quickly can you turn it around? And the public opinion and Tory MPs complaining are linked. There are the usual suspects who don't like Dominic Cummings, who are, I think, probably the first to come out, or at least some of them were, when it came to this story breaking. But the reason I think this is getting some momentum is because if you speak to any MP, they are just saying that they are astonished by the number of emails they're getting from constituents complaining about the situation. Lots of those messages say things like, I've never contacted my MP before. Now, that gets them spooked, because if it is, you know, one of these sites encouraging you to get in touch and it's mainly left-wing activists, they can dismiss it. But they're worried that it does really have cut-through. So if you've got public opinion on side, I think immediately some of these Tory MPs wouldn't be pressing in the way they are. So it's feeding a part of the rebellion. But also I think it goes to the fact that we've seen plenty of times that this Number 10 is not particularly bothered about Tory MPs. They don't spend a huge amount of time trying to win them over. I think we've had one conference call, you know, during lockdown with Boris Johnson and his MPs. And I think when they won a majority of 80, there was a sense that they didn't need to do much, you know, TLC in terms of keeping MPs on side. I think that as time has gone on, you're seeing that a majority of 80 actually does mean that you have to do a bit of that. But that said, you know, this is the same government, be it in a different parliament, that ultimately, you know, withdrew the whip from quite a few of its MPs over a Brexit vote, and it had no majority. So that was a different circumstance. But I actually think the public opinion is the more damning thing. Firstly, because it makes MPs more skittish, but also this is a government which is really focused on public opinion. They are ultimately, you know, government by focus group. They might not see the virtues of Parliament, as perhaps some previous governments do, or also think that ministers are that crucial. Most decisions should be made in Downing Street, but they do religiously poll and focus group. So I think that if this is consistent, if there is a big drop in support for the Conservative Party, I'm not saying that that means they will necessarily change their mind on Dominic Cummings, but I do think it changes the political picture more than having about 35 MPs on Twitter.
And in terms of actual government policy and in sort of tackling the coronavirus, James, do you get the sense that this crisis may be affecting things already? I mean, I think Hancock was asked about fines for breaking lockdown for childcare today at the press conference.
Yeah, I think that question was an illustration of the trouble for the government now, which is certainly the government's social media messaging, and to a lesser extent the government's guidance, was kind of very crude, very don't, you know, stay at home, and kind of implication that there were absolutely no exceptions at all. The actual kind of regulations created a bit more slack than that. But I think the challenge for the government now is that their defence in this situation is that this was a reasonable interpretation of the rules, and people will now argue that their conduct was a reasonable interpretation of the rules. I don't mean that, obviously that doesn't apply to people having kind of house parties or whatever, but people who travelled to be closer to family members who could help them out with childcare now have a clear case that they are now being told that was a reasonable interpretation of the rules. I think that is a challenge. I think there is, in a way, the other problem for the government today with the number of the ministerial resignation, the number of Tory MPs, is Boris Johnson is up in front of a liaison committee in Parliament tomorrow. He is bound to be asked about this business. And I would be surprised if those questions didn't create a news line which keeps the story going for another day. And in some ways, the problem for the government is it's another day when the story is likely to be on the front pages. And I think the government view is that it will probably cease being on the front pages by the end of the week. But if that doesn't happen, that is obviously tricky for them.
And we saw the subject as well dominating the press conference with Matt Hancock this evening. How did you think he managed, Katie?
I mean, it's become a regular sight seeing cabinet ministers basically, you know, bending over backwards to defend Dominic Cummings at the moment in terms of the guidance. I think we've already seen Matt Hancock's tweets from over the weekend. I do think it complicates things for the health secretary. I think, as James touches on, having gone from really quite clear messaging, generally speaking, and being quite quick to jump on things such as, you know, when Neil Ferguson, the scientific advisor, breached lockdown, and now actually having to take this more nuanced line. And I do think you can argue that Neil Ferguson and Dominic Cummings' cases are different in the sense that one was to do childcare and going somewhere and staying, the other perhaps more leisure, if you want to describe it that way. But at the same time, it just means, again, it just gets a lot more complicated. And I think that, again, if we get to a situation where every single press conference is now just questions on a number 10 advisor, that's a difficult place to be in. And I'm sure some people will say, oh, well, it's the media's fault, they should ask different questions. But whichever side you blame in it, it's clearly not a good situation for the government if they cannot talk about the things they want to be talking about, or even know things that should be of big importance in terms of lockdown easing, because they have this row ongoing. So I think it'll be interesting to see, can they move away from it near the end of the week? We already have had various things trailed in terms of lockdown easing. Will they be able to, for example, you know, get a front page this week, which isn't to do with Dominic Cummings?
I think if you look at this, I think the pace of lockdown easing, even before this incident, was likely to pick up, for the simple fact that, you know, those European countries that have eased up, they haven't seen a second spike in infections. And given how little is known about this disease, the example of what happened in these other countries was always going to be key. But I think now Boris Johnson on Sunday emphasised the plan for schools to open on June 1st stands, although he accepted that not all schools will be able to do so. Yes, there was an announcement about the opening of non-essential retail. I think it's quite clear what the direction of travel is now, and that this lockdown is going to be eased up relatively fast. And I think that the kind of question there is, how does that go in terms of public opinion? To some extent, you might think, oh, people are like that. But the polling suggests that the public are very nervy about the lockdown being eased. And the government, for a whole host of reasons, you know, medical reasons related to what's happening in Europe, political reasons related to the current situation, economic reasons related to what is going on with the economy right now and how long you can keep it in this kind of, in this state that it is currently, kind of suspended animation that it is currently in, want to ease things up with relative speed. The question is, how comfortable are the public with that? All the polling we've seen suggests that the public are much more nervy than one might think about easing up these restrictions on their liberties.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Katie. And thank you for listening.
The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Try a month in print and online for free. And, for a limited time only, get a free wireless phone charger. Go to www.spectator.co.uk/charger to start today.